Welcome everyone to That Was Then, This Is Now Speaker Jam, organized by the Paradise Strong Book Study Meeting of NA. I would like to open the Speaker Jam with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am asking Archer to read the service prayer. You got that, Wade?
Say again, Francis?
The service prayer?
Coming up.
Archer?
Aloha, Archer, Addict in Recovery. The NA service prayer. God, grant us knowledge that we may serve according to your divine precepts. Instill in us a sense of your purpose. Make us servants of your will and grant us a bond of selflessness that this may truly be your work, not ours, in order that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction.
Thank you. We would like to thank the History Lovers Workshop for their support in putting on this event. When the COVID-19 hit our country and the world, like many other NA groups, Paradise Strong moved to the Zoom platform. We started inviting the authors of the stories from the basic text to speak after we read their stories. As people discovered our meeting, they would ask if we had recorded the speakers or if we were going to bring them back because they had missed them. In response to that need, we decided that putting on a series of speaker jams on the weekend, giving people more access to listen to the recordings of the authors so people might be able to enjoy them in the future, as well as potentially recording some of our history. We also themed it, That Was Then, This Is Now, with the idea that we live in just for today and that our members and our authors might like to share and hear about what and how their lives have progressed since their stories were written. At this time, Kevin O from Chico will be reading A Gift of Life. And then the author will be speaking, who is Bob P. from Pennsylvania.
Am I going, Francis?
Yeah, we're screen sharing the story, or you could read out your book.
Yeah, I have a printout here. Hi, everybody. My name is Kevin. I'm an addict. A gift called life. I'd always said that I would never use drugs. Looking back, everything I said I wouldn't do, I ended up doing. The first time I used drugs, I started with pot. I didn't like it, but I got used to it. If I didn't use it, I didn't feel cool. I had a good job at the time. It was the place to work when you left high school. I was expelled from school in the 10th grade for starting a riot. For me, just landing that job was fortunate. I was hanging out at the pool hall before work. Around 3 or 4 o'clock, I started to feel tired and someone said, try some of this. It will help you stay awake at work tonight. I didn't even ask what it was. I just opened my mouth. Within 20 minutes, I felt like a new person. I could talk to people I was normally afraid of. I felt better than them. I started to take about 10 diet pills a day. My logic was that if just 2 made me feel so good, why not try 10? It worked. But after 6 months, I started to miss work. I lost 50 pounds. My hair started to fall out. My teeth started to hurt. One day at the pool hall, a close friend said, hey, try some of this. You shoot it in your arm. Once again, I said, I'll never do that. But about 1 hour later, I tried it. From that day, I was in love with it. I never cheated on it. If it said jump, I would jump. I even quit my job because something like this was too good to miss. I always wanted to forget my problems. With heroin, I could. It always fixed me. It cost a lot of money, so I did it only when I had the money. When I started selling heroin, I got ripped off a few times. I can remember saying, boy, are these guys in bad shape when they rip off their friends. Well, 6 months later, I started ripping them off. Always wanted people to come to me for answers. I like that power. So when I got my income tax return, I bought some heroin, sold all of it, but saved one shot for me. It sold fast. I made a quick buck and got a free high. Excuse me. I felt like a king and I had control. Everyone came to me for heroin because I dropped the price. When all the other people had shot their supply, I was the only one holding. Then I raised the price and started using more than I was selling. I didn't want to do that, but I had no choice. I didn't know that I was controlled by the drug at the time. I thought that I was handling it okay. I lived in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the time. One day, the man I got my drugs from asked me if I would be willing to take a chance and go to Puerto Rico with him to purchase some heroin. My answer was, sure, why not? We could have been busted while getting on the plane to come back home. I had brought some heroin with me and wrapped it in foil. We went through airline screening procedures. They didn't check me. I got away that time. I was lucky. We came back and my luck ran out. I got busted for a series of crimes consisting of 6 felonies. This was my first time in jail, and I was afraid of all the things that I had heard from the streets. A lot of it was true, but some of it wasn't. That didn't make me any less afraid. I stayed for 1 week and was bailed out. 2 months later, I got busted for possession of 1 ounce of heroin and went back to jail. Again, I stayed for 1 week and was bailed out. Only 2 weeks later, I got busted again for breaking into someone's house in broad daylight. In order to supply my habit, I had started to rip off everyone, my family, my friends, and strangers. I knew I was going to jail all this time, so I just gave up. My sentence was 2 separate terms, each 11 and a half to 23 months in jail. I spent 13 months in jail and got out on early parole. When I got out, I made a promise to myself to limit my heroin use to the weekends. I didn't know anything about addiction. Little did I know that it was the first fix that started me. Everyone I knew either went to jail for 5 to 10 years, overdosed on drugs, or was an addict. Consequently, I was led right back to the streets. In only 2 weeks, I was worse than I was before I started again. Lenny, the only friend that I had, and his sister gave me $1,000 to pay off my parole officer in order to move to Florida. In my heart, that's what I wanted to do. My addiction was too great. I got the money and said to myself, buy some drugs, sell them, and have spending money when you get to Florida. I went to New York with the money, bought the heroin, but put it all in my arm. Now what was I going to tell them? Excuse making and storytelling was over. I was addicted. I came back to Pennsylvania. For the first time in my addiction, I felt guilty. Lenny came to see me and didn't want to hear any more stories or excuses. He said, you need help when you rip me off, your friend. You're in trouble. I knew he was right. I accepted his invitation to stay with him and his wife until I got help. I felt like hell in my guts. I called my parole officer and told him I wanted to go away somewhere for help. He sent me to a treatment center in North Central Pennsylvania. I heard a lot of bad things about this place, but I didn't care. My back was against the wall and I was tired of living the way I was living. Even though I didn't really want to stop using heroin, I went to the center and I stayed there for 60 days. Looking back, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. Before I got there, I believed once an addict, always an addict. I believed that I'd never be able to stop. They showed me a new way of life, a way to cope with being an addict. I decided to move to the area. There were 4 NA meetings each week and I went to all of them. I also got a sponsor and went to a lot of discussion meetings. It helped me to a degree, but the only time I felt strong was at a meeting or after one. Before the meetings, I was always thinking about getting high. This feeling lasted for about 6 months. Then some good things started to happen to me. They asked me to speak at a meeting. I felt a part of the meeting that night. It made me feel good about what I was doing. I started to go to NA meetings in prison and helped to start new NA meetings. NA meetings each week, and there were 4 NA meetings each week, and I went to all, I'm sorry, I got lost there for a second. Then I fell in love. Looking back, I was in heat. This new life and everything in it was a new ball game. Now I not only had to deal with me, but with someone else too. I was clean for 1 year and not ready for all the new things that were expected of me. I tried as hard as I could, and so did she. We moved to Western Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, there was no NA within 300 miles. So I went to other 12-step programs for that year. The members were all older than I, not that it should matter, but I felt alone. Well, I came home from work one day and my wife said, get out, I don't love you anymore. I felt like someone had to put a knife into my heart and turned it around a few times. With no possible reconciliation in sight, I leaned on a few people to get me through this adjustment. My sponsor suggested working the 12 steps. And when your knees knock, kneel. Needless to say, I spent a lot of time on my knees. I also relied on NA literature because there was no NA meetings around me. I asked God, as we understood him, to come into my life and take some of the pain. He did. My life became a lot better and easier to bear after that. Then God used me with the aid of other people in starting our first NA meeting in our area. At that time in our tri-state, there was not one. NA meetings in West Virginia, Ohio, or Western Pennsylvania. Uh-oh. I feel like I'm missing a page here, Francis. There was not one NA meeting in West Virginia, Ohio, or Western Pennsylvania. I did the best I could, as we all did. We now have approximately 75 meetings in a 100-mile radius. We have a hotline, an area service committee, and a regional service committee. I attended the World Service Conference 2 years ago. When I came back, I did some public information work in radio, television, and newspaper. A while later, I started to date the disc jockey from the radio station where we broadcasted public information. We had a lot of fun together. We went to the first East Coast convention where she was the disc jockey. We started to make plans for our marriage. As most normal relationships go, we had a fight on the phone one night, but a real shock came the next day when her mother called to tell me that she'd been killed in a car accident that night. I felt like killing myself. I knew there was pain coming, pain I didn't want to feel. I didn't want to turn to drugs either because I knew that was not the answer. I called my friend and just started crying. He came over to my house and gave me a big hug and said, "Just tell me you didn't get high." Somehow I knew everything would be all right. I guess out of relief, I started to laugh. I continued to rely on NA even more. I went to more meetings, talked about it. Before I knew it, the pain was easing and I was handling it without using drugs. I asked God to come into my heart and I thanked him for putting her briefly into my life. Now I know that everything I have is only borrowed from God. I met someone very special after that and got married. She is also an NA. I'm working on my 7th year clean. My life is a lot better today than it has ever been. I am happy and I feel good about myself. I still go to 5 meetings a week. It helps me to be in contact with people who have the same problem that I have. All of my friends are through NA. NA saved my life. NA is my life.
Thank you, Kevin. At this time, I'd like to introduce our first author. That would be Bob P. from Pennsylvania. Bob.
Bob, you can unmute yourself.
My name's Bob Plummer. I'm a recovering addict. And when I hear that story, it's just like sometimes I go get flashbacks and just watch how God worked through people like me, how he works through people like you guys to create what he wants to happen. And when Francis said the way it was and the way it is for me is the NA prayer that you guys just read. My purpose in life is to serve God, only God. And he puts things on my plate for me to do, like, for example, to help addicts to get to where I got to. And whether the person gets it or not, there's no way I take credit for it. I automatically give the glory to God. Because if the person doesn't make it, I'm not that powerful. I'm not that powerful. And the longer I stay clean, the further my walk goes in my spiritual walk, it's more joyful. I can identify with the one guy's, the title of his story, An Indian Without a Tribe. I was married 3 times, first 2 times, a year each. Both were in recovery. The first one had 30 years in relapse. The second one had 20 years in relapse. and third wife I was with for 20 years. And how I became aware of what my purpose was supposed to be towards the end of the marriage, the third marriage, there was just something inside me, how God speaks to us when we're still. It's hard for me to be still, as most people can identify with. When we go to meditate, my mind races. Some people can like stay still, you know, and I've seen people and heard their stories, they can relax. I'm beginning to be able to do that. I force myself. But anyway, I ask him every day to slow everything down so I can hear his message to me. And the stiller I become, the more joy I have in my life. Right now I don't feel too good. I have a temperature of 101 degrees. I got the cold shakes. I got a severe headache. I got 5 symptoms of the COVID, and they have 7 symptoms. I have 5 symptoms and it's not COVID. I had a liver transplant three and a half years ago. My son gave me his 60% of his liver. And anybody who knows anything about liver transplant, anytime you get a living donor, there can be complications with, especially the bile duct. And in my case, I had 6 surgeries, and a couple of the ones in the beginning were like 10, 12 hours each. And I almost didn't make it. And in those, in the one surgery, I felt like I met, I don't know how you call it. It's not addiction. I met the devil, I guess. That's the only word I can put onto it. And I felt like I was slipping down this slimy pit, and there was nobody in intensive care. I was there for at least a week, 10 days. I can't even remember. I was there for 6 weeks, and I just kept, you know, when I was conscious and wasn't hallucinating, I just kept saying this, you know, the serenity prayer. That serenity prayer saved my life. July 12th of 1975, when I got clean, I used to repeat that 30, 40 times a day. It really did help me. And when you think about it, when I get into situations now, I can get out of them so much quicker. And in most cases, I don't even want to take it on because I know I can't change anything. And I certainly don't want to. So I relieve myself from that responsibility. I admire the committee for doing this to raise interest in H&I. That was my first love and still is. We can't go into no institution now because of the COVID, and also public information, which I think we should have more of it. But sometimes I think people, they get antsy about putting stuff out in public about Narcotics Anonymous still. God used me to help other people by me using my mouth in public. I mean, I wasn't out on a corner passing out IPs, but when I felt like somebody was sharing pain about something, I would share my story without hesitation. And I believe that's my responsibility. Some people want to keep that secret. Some people want to put, there's like a lamp that shines and they want to put something to cover that light that we've got and we've received so graciously from God. And I think he wants us to share that more. And so anyway, I love H&I. I told the committee, I don't know, a month ago, I thought things were going to go towards the right way and it didn't. It's taking another turn to the bad, but I'm going to get back involved in it. I still am involved with my own group. I'm the first one there, the last one to go. And of course, we have our chairs 6 feet apart. You must wear a mask. And if the church sees someone without a mask, they're shutting it down. And some meetings in the back roads, like 2 weeks ago, there was a meeting, 35 people, elbow to elbow with no mask. Well, last night, they were 6 feet apart with mask on. And I think it's smart. Until they have a remedy for all this nonsense. But I wish that I didn't feel so bad right now. Narcotics Anonymous. When I went into the magistrate's office I'm a property manager and I own my own real estate and a recovery house. And, you know, I've been involved with it for 30 years. I went to the magistrate's office, and there was one of our flyers up there. If you have a drug problem, call. And they had them little tags on, and they were all missing. And it was like, wow, you know, that's. So I went out and got a bunch of them and gave them back to the magistrate so they can make the phone call. I think my recovery speaks for itself. I have very strong men in my life. I just don't have the tolerance for people that work the program halfway. Kind of never did in my time I've been clean. And I'm not saying I'm better than that. I'm not saying that. I'm clean by God's grace and mercy. And I probably didn't realize that my purpose was to serve him until I was clean 30 years. And it was overwhelming. It was that simple. And the simpler I keep it, I got so much more joy in it. And I have, you know, a purpose. I mean, it's like in my marriage, it was for 20 years. If I would have put my relationship that I have with God before my marriage and then put my wife second and my family third, things might have went differently. Well, I did that. Probably about 2 years towards the end, but it was too late. I gave it my best. God knows that, but he rearranged my priority schedule, and he became number one. I'm in a relationship for 5 years now, and like I'm gun shy. We got engaged. She's 24 years younger than me, and you know, it scares me. But I'm 67, and the way I carry myself today is by hanging around people that still hold me accountable. If I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do, I'm around some guys who are standing on solid rock. And some of them guys aren't in recovery. Some of them guys belong to the church I go to. And one of the guys that's in there who I admire because of his walk, because I would sit behind him for the last 12 years, I watched him. His wife died with cancer, and then watched him walk through that with his head up strong. And then his kids had problems with drugs. I knew them kids because they went to school with my kids. They walked strong and they're all doing good now. And now he has ALS. And he's ahead of the cement. And I can't explain how he's helped me tremendously. He's an ex-stealer, Tom Chilkin, his name is. And I know he wouldn't mind me saying his name because he did a lot of drugs and he admits that. And he's gonna be passing soon, so short of a miracle. And we all get a shot at that. I'm ready myself. So when they told me I was going to die in 18 months with liver cancer, I said, okay. I mean, I didn't want to because my son was still in high school, but The NA program, I cannot say it enough. For me, I'm just saying for me. People say, oh, it's all you. Yeah, that's my way of life. Like, when I walk out my door, I don't even have to think about calling my, when I see a situation, it's an automatic response because you guys taught me that. Now, if I start hanging around the wrong people, the wrong thing's gonna happen. Clean, around the wrong people, clean. So, for example, tonight, if I can hold up with this temperature and everything, there's six of us going to the best Thai place in Pittsburgh, and I can't wait. There's a young dude by Justin M. He's listen, this guy is just a monster on the street. Street. And I'm just watching how God is working in this man's life. And he has probably the strongest woman on the planet behind him. I just, that's why I enjoy keep coming back when I see these new guys coming and they do what we ask them to do. Like, take a deep breath, go to meetings, sponsor, home group, you know, be the first one there, be the last one to go. Well, I got to get up. No, you don't have to go home. You don't have to go home. Just like I didn't have to be on here. Yes, I do have to be here. I mean, I'm sick as a dog, but that's okay. I'm almost done here. I want to, like, when I see them new guys, it gives me motivation. People say, why do you keep going to meetings with 45 years clean? Because that's my responsibility. It says right in the basic text. Guys like me, it's our responsibility, not just me, but it's everybody's responsibility to create a recovery atmosphere. And any nonsense that goes in on around NA, it's our job to step up and say, "Ooh, stop, guys. That's not how we do this here." There's a book that we have to follow. And there's a couple books I follow that way. And that's one, and there's another one. And I follow it the best I can. I make mistakes. I want to thank Francis and the committee. And I hope you guys do some good out there in H&I. I want to thank you and God bless.
After you and I talked, it bothered me. You know, like, I didn't let it go very well.